Well, good morning, everyone. Wait, it's not quite 8 here. Well, it's close enough. I'm glad to see you all. And last time we met, we discussed the abstract mind. And today we're going to look at the intuition. And one of the places that I discovered quite a contrast between the two was in the very last pages of, very last pages of Externalization of the Hierarchy. For some reason, DK begins an analysis of a certain disciple by the name of Z, you know, XYZ. And he talks about this person's highly developed abstract mind, but his inability to really summon or utilize the intuition. And he draws a clear distinction between them. So maybe as we read a little bit today about the nature of intuition, and the nature of inclusive reason, which is as close as we can get, I think, in what he's written to the idea of pure reason, we will understand why this individual could not utilize the intuition. He was, as it were, standing apart from the group. He had a certain judgmentalism about him, and he was interested in his own success as a speaker. He wanted to make good, as it were, from the platform where he would deliver lectures. He or she, I don't know. We have no idea who this is, really, because as far as I can see, there are no individuals in the group, Tibetan's group, that are identified by the word Z. There is a disciple whose last name is, I think, Zori, Z-O-R-I, but I don't think that's the one we're talking about. It probably is someone fairly prominent in the group, but not really working with the group. And I think we're going to understand something about the nature of group consciousness as a necessity to stimulate the intuition. So we will move on to from abstract thought to this Buddhic realization. I wonder, let's see, Michael, I just sent you that last collection from Externalization of the Hierarchy. Maybe, no, I don't think I'll get into that. I think it's enough for us to simply say, look at what DK says about the intuition and see whether we actually do work with the intuition in any respect. But meanwhile, I just want to say hi to you and to welcome you, and Veronica, and Anna Sklar, and Anne Parker. It's a little difficult to scroll down this particular list. Catherine, let's see, I'll make it a little bigger. Catherine Pyer, and Cindy, and Joe Waltz, and Joan, Karen, and Michael Starkrow. And Risto is here, and Stephen Renneberg. These seem like the people who are here at the moment, along with Michael Stacy and myself. So, maybe I should first ask you if anybody has an idea how you judge the nature of intuition. What is it to you? Let's ponder just for a little bit, and maybe you might have a thought in that respect that you would like to offer, either in the chat or perhaps aloud. Let's enter the meditative state. We know something about the broad nature of abstract mind that we discussed a week ago, its inclusive nature, its ability to cover many specifics with a formula or generality, its ability to, as it were, search from a very high point of view and generalize. How is the intuition for you different in any respect? Let's just pause because we're going to, in the quiet, see if we can learn what that is. I just want to say that DK does discriminate. He discriminates not only the intuition from the abstract mind, but he discriminates the intuition from what he calls the psychic hunch, the psychic hunch. It's quite a different thing. So we'll look at that. Does anybody have anything you'd like to offer regarding what intuition means to you? It's a good thing to determine where we stand in our assessment of a particular quality. This quality is a principle. It's the Buddhic principle in general. Would anybody like to offer a thought on that? And Michael, if you'd be so kind, if there's anything coming up from anybody. Otherwise, I'll simply get into two places in the books where intuition is defined in an interesting way.
No one has as yet raised their hand or written anything in the chat box, but perhaps I can begin the conversation by suggesting that in the beginning, it may come through as a spark of knowingness from deep within, and it has nothing to do with that gut feeling kind of thing that so many consider as intuition.
Knowingness, I think, is a good word when it comes to intuition and Good. So that's a thought. And before I say much about it, is there anybody else that has, when thinking of this subject, defined intuition to themselves in a certain way? The spark. The word spark is also good because sometimes the suddenness of intuition resembles the spark. And there are two planets particularly which seem to feed the intuition, and they are Neptune and Uranus. With Uranus, you have the sudden spark.
So, Karen. Well, yeah, Stephen has written instantaneous complete understanding.
Okay, that's good. That's good. And
And
we may
Karen?
Have to, yeah, just I'll make a little comment on it. We may have to break down that flash of understanding into its component parts, and that's the function of the mind to do so. But it does arrive whole, whole. It arrives as a wholeness. And that is an interesting bundling of many things together, which can be broken down into relationships and sequences. And generally, the word flash, the word instantaneous, these do apply, unless, of course, it's a slower kind of Neptunian osmosis, where the knowingness, the understanding, seeps in, you know, rather than flashes immediately. Maybe we have different ways of approaching that. Sometimes when you've pondered on something a long time, there's a slow accretion of light on the subject rather than the instantaneous flash, and sometimes it is the instantaneous understanding. Okay, and Karen writes or says?
Karen, you can unmute yourself.
Okay. Learning the system. Well, I would agree with what Michael Stacy said in the beginning. To me, it's an inner knowing, and sometimes it's it takes on the gradualness as you express, and sometimes it's a direct knowing. Something just drops in, and it, you know, and it's like, and I know that it's correct, but I don't know how I know.
Yes, maybe one is internally convinced of the correctness, but maybe one doesn't reason one's way there. I think what we'll discover is that there is a difference between reasoning and pure reason. Maybe the analogy, let's just say that regarding intuition, there is the factor of illumination. You know, at night when the lightning flashes, you see the outlines of whatever it may be, a city, a building, a forest, and then it disappears. There's the suddenness of that flash of seeing. There's also an analogy of the sun slowly rising at dawn and reaching the highest point of illumination at noon. So it's a gradual illumination, which is more of the Neptunian variety rather than the Uranian flash. But we do get there to that point where we are convinced that this is true, and maybe we just don't know how we arrived. So DK is going to give us some hints about our arrival at the state of illumination which intuition brings. Thank you, Karen. Anything else?
Next, Anna writes, awareness, according to the state of consciousness, which changes as we integrate with the higher worlds.
Yes, you know, the word awareness is interesting because DK speaks more of monadic awareness than he does of monadic consciousness. It seems that the word consciousness implies duality, and awareness may be a little less so. And obviously, the degree of light that we access and the degree of truth that we access increases as we raise our point of tension and become involved with spiritual fields which are only available to certain higher points of tension. So that when we have this focused, immovable will and we do not deviate from the subject, the illumination is liable to come, and it will be a greater and greater illumination the higher the point of tension. So that is, that idea of awareness is very important, but it's not a subject-object awareness. because the subject-object awareness has to be overcome. It has to be unified. And in the state of contemplation, and I do recommend reading what Alice Bailey has to say about contemplation in her book, From Intellect to Intuition. In the state of contemplation, the union between subject and object, which I think is a very important aspect of intuition, is increasingly revealed. Thank you, Anna.
Catherine writes, sometimes it drops in like a seed, which more light unfolds from it.
I think, and that's something that you were saying, Michael, too. And you know, it's interesting, Catherine, that word drop in. You know, in German, the intuition is known by the name of Einfall, which means to fall in. It falls in. It comes from somewhere. And like a seed of revelation or a flash of understanding, it falls into the mind or into the consciousness. So the drop-in idea, I think, is associated with intuition, indeed. Thank you.
And then Anne Veronica, and after I read this, Michael
has
his hand raised. Anna writes, Anne Veronica writes, I once had this experience. I was trying to solve a mathematical problem. I was dealing with it for 1 or 2 days. What happened is the solution came completely to me. Otherwise, I would like a definition for each, starting from instinct, which I guess is from the astral, and we use the solar plexus.
Yeah, and in instinct also has to do with the physical appetites and their promptings. You know, when you look at animal instinct, it's governed by appetite for food. It's governed by the sex instinct. There are many survival issues which instinct manages. Now, you kind of wonder about instinct, whether the lord of a particular kingdom, who is a very high being and conscious, very conscious being, is not providing the intelligence that makes instinct work. In other words, the animal or the unconscious human being does certain things, and they appear to be intelligent in terms of its survival, in terms of its management of the physical plane. But it can be under the direction of the lord of a kingdom, who, and these beings are already highly developed and have a great regulatory intelligence. So, you know, the whole idea of the unexpectedness of intuition is something worth noting. And the fact that, there's that old story of the shoemaker and the elves. Maybe you heard of it. It's, you know, it's like a children's story, a kind of a fairy tale. There was the poor cobbler, and he could never keep up in the making of shoes. So he was about ready to throw in the towel, and he basically finished the preparation for the shoes that had to be finalized, and he was just so tired he went to sleep. And then when he woke up in the morning, the shoes were completely finished and assembled. And he did this night after night. Always he would prepare the shoes for putting together and finalizing, and when he woke up, they would be finalized. So the story there is that we prepare the mental field and go as far as we can with it. And then rather than force it and grind upon it and push it, we do something else. We just let it stay. And something enters, which we might call the power of assembly, the power of cohesion, the power of whole making. And we're unconscious of where it comes from. In the case of the shoemaker, it came from two little elves who were putting the shoes together while he slept. And these elves are like a symbol for the constructive power of the intuition without our own reasoning push. They have their own intelligence. It's within us, and we put these things, we allow them to put the final touches on our mental work. And then we have a wholeness that we didn't have before. Okay.
And Michael Crow, you can unmute yourself.
Michael. He's usually right here. Maybe he'll be forthcoming. He knows all about this program. Okay, is there anybody else?
Can I say something?
Oh, yeah, to you. You're there too. Okay.
While you are waiting. Well, this has been a great puzzle for me years with you, Michael, because we have been talking about that. And my continuous search for that is that how much our soul ray is defining how we are getting these inner, I just call it in the general word, this inner contact, that directive force, or that we try to read something. And for me, it has been, you were already pointing out in one point, Michael, that it is related to seeing. But this is something what I think it is related to the first ray, and it's not seeing as we talk about seeing. It's some kind of a whole inside vision flash, and after that comes the knowing. And it looks like that it is functioning always this way, and then it descends in different ways to other senses, what can be learned to translate. And then I have been thinking, and I think it is related also, the development of the intuition is related to our conscience.
Conscience?
How do you pronounce that? Conscience.
Conscience is like an inner guidance of doing things.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. That you can destroy that line as well if one one continuously work against.
Right. If one disobeys the inner impulses of the soul, which come as conscience, then you can destroy the link. Yeah, you can. At least temporarily, you can make the link useless. Yes,
yeah, you can. Distort it, or because it's very pure. It's that immediate window opening into reality. But in the beginning, if I think about childhood, you don't recognize any difference because you just leave that. And then you start to understand that, wow, this is not something which is like normal. This is the wrong word, but you know that the
customary,
general.
Customary.
Yeah. And then the more one is dwelling with it and try to understand what is that and how this is working. So this is a part of communication with the soul or the other realities as well, how it catches us, like the first states, and it can be developed all the time, more and more refined.
Yeah, that's very true. And the cultivation, I mean, what DK basically says is that the cultivation of the intuition is a project for the sixth root race. And that's a long span of time. The project for the next 2,000 years is the development of the abstract mind. And then one will have a basis for the development of the intuition. But let's just say that, well, I'll tell you what, you know, DK will say it. We'll examine that and see what he says, because there are some surprising things there in the beginning of the Glamour book that some of you are familiar with. And in the book Esoteric Psychology, he deals with the factor of an advanced second ray meditative formula called inclusive reason. And it's very near to the pure reason of the intuition. So we'll take a look at that. Okay, Tuya, well, thank you.
And I mean, yes, yeah, and I meant this because you see that it is something which is sacred, or it is not from this world, if I put this way, but it is very precious faculty in that sense, not to be distorted abused. Or yes, so that I meant in cultivation, if I really think what it would be in the sixth root race or something that you have that open all the time.
But these
are flashes which comes here and there, and one cannot demand, okay, now I want it. It just comes as it comes.
At least as we are constituted. You know, I think Brazil will be an important center for this. One of the important sixth root race centers will be South America. And Brazil seems to be, with its fourth ray soul and its second ray personality, very much on the line to bring in the cultivation of the intuition. Now, you know, he says it will last 10 million years. Just imagine, 10 million years of the sixth root race. So you know, our Aryan race, where we've cultivated the mind, the concrete mind, to a high degree, is nowhere near as long as the sixth root race is long. So we'll have plenty of opportunity to develop that.
Yes, I was just thinking about artists that who can express something. And very often there are those stories that the artists are not understood at their time, but only later, because they have been catching something from the future already.
They've seen ahead. Now, you know, I think the most synthetic of the senses that we have is sight, because I think like 80% of our input is taken in through sight. But I think for musicians, you can have a musical intuition as well through the sense of sound. I think it works mostly through sight and through sound or hearing. There are other senses, of course, and they may trigger something, but they're not as intuitively attuned as sight and sound. The whole making faculty comes in through sight and sound, and that is what the fourth ray will bring to us, especially in the area of healing. The very first healing approaches will be along the fourth ray and involve sight and sound. So, okay, we have a little bit more. Thank you, Tuya. A little bit more, and then we'll take a look. Maybe we won't be able to finish with this entirely today. It's such a big subject, and I think everybody has their views about how it works for them, and we have to be, I'm going to use the English word, discerning. We have to really locate, in the midst of all the information that we get, what is the information of reality? You use that word too. You use the word real or reality, and that's where the intuition comes in. And it's extremely different from a glamorous information which is veiled and distorted and unreal. Lead us from the unreal to the real is the second of those mantras that we use to guide us. Okay. Now, is there anything else, Michael?
Are no you other there? Hands. Michael, yeah, no other Crow? Hands raised. Michael Crow is to you.
Oh, well, how did that happen?
she came in using his link, and
hello, hello.
Oh, is that
I'm Michael Crow?
Oh, okay, okay. Was that Michael? I'm sorry.
No, that was joking.
my intuition is not working. Okay. Okay. Now let's go over to glamour, a world problem. And this is going to take a little while. And then maybe it will have to be the next time. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't I read the shorter? No. I'll do this. The definition of the intuition. Now, look very carefully and think carefully about all the things the intuition is not. Do you see on the screen this definition of the intuition that I should be having?
Yes, you are showing that.
Okay, that's good. All right. So the definition of the intuition. The intuition is not, he starts with is not, okay, a welling forth of love to people and therefore an understanding of them. I mean, this is a good thing, but it's not what he calls the intuition. Much that is called the intuition is recognition of similarities and the possession of a clear analytical mind. In other words, you have something in common with the person and the clarity of mind will reveal that to you and you will see the state in which they exist. Intelligent people who have lived in the world for some time and who have experienced much, and who have contacted many other people, can usually sum up with facility the problems and dispositions of others, provided they are interested. So you turn your experience and your analytical mind towards what you want to understand, towards the person you want to understand. And we say, I have an intuition about you. And in fact, it may simply be that you have a clear analytical mind and you have been through something similar yourself. There are similarities to your own state, and therefore you can rightly assess what's going on with the other person. However, even if you can sum up the character of another person and how they will respond and react, we must not, however, it says, confound this with the intuition. Now he goes on, getting rid of things, not this, not that, etc. The intuition has no relation to psychism, either higher or lower. Now that may come as a surprise because Neptune, an intuitively intuition-inducing planet, is also the planet of psychism. But let's see what he says. The seeing of a vision, the hearing of the voice of the silence, a pleased reaction to teaching of any kind does not infer the functioning of the intuition. Now, all of these things may be good. There may be a higher psychism. We may see a vision. We may hear the voice of the silence, which may well be the voice of the soul. And of course, his pleased reaction is a kind of pride. Maybe that's not so good, but it's not the functioning of the intuition, according to DK. And it is not only the seeing of symbols, for that is a special sort of perception and the capacity to tune in on the universal mind upon that layer of its activity, which produces the pattern forms of all, the pattern forms on which all etheric bodies are based. So it's not only the seeing of symbols. All right. It is not intelligent psychology and a loving desire to help. Again,
You lost your document.
Uh-oh. Yes, I see what's happened. I'm spinning. And I don't know how to get out of the spin.
Are you able to share just the document and not your screen?
Wait a second. It is, hold on. Here's stopping sharing. And let's see if I can go back to something which, I lost that document. So here's what I'll do. I don't know how it happened. I just started spinning, okay. So I'm going to go to Glamour World Problem again and hope that on page 4 or so, I might find it. Okay. Well, here's the definition of the intuition again. Let's see if I can get there. Okay. Is this it? Oh no, it's not it. Oh my. The screen sharing has stopped and shared window is closed. Okay. This is what I want. And I'm going to hope that it will work. Now, I'm sure you don't see my screen. You probably see me. But here we go. Are we back? Are we back now?
Yes, we're back now.
Okay. So, I'll be careful. It's not symbol seeing, okay? It's not intelligent psychology and the loving desire to help. The will to serve is very good, but it's not what he calls intuition. Because that emanates from the interplay of a personality governed by a strong soul orientation and the group conscious soul. Okay, so these are all of the things that it is not. And I'm just going to take a risk here and hope that this will work. Now let's see what he says. And it's really different from what we might suspect. Intuition is the synthetic understanding, which is the prerogative of the soul. And it only becomes possible when the soul on its own level is reaching in two directions, towards the monad and towards the integrated and perhaps even if only temporarily coordinated at one personality. It is the first indication of a deeply subjective unification which will find its consummation at the third initiation. As a matter of fact, I think that only when we organize the Buddhic vehicle, most of us after the third initiation, is a truer type of intuition possible. I'm going to read that again. Intuition is the synthetic understanding. Now, you know, it's broad and all-inclusive, if we know what synthesis is, which is the prerogative of the soul. And it only becomes possible when the soul, just like the hierarchy reaching towards Shambhala and humanity, it only becomes possible when the soul on its own level is reaching in two directions, toward the monad and toward the integrated and perhaps even if only temporarily coordinated and at one personality. It is the first indication of a deeply subjective unification which will find its consummation at the third initiation. Now, just imagine for a second, a moment, that you are the soul. You are the consciousness placed in the middle position between the monad and the personality. Just see if we can get a sense of that. How would you reach toward the monad? What would you do to reach toward monadic awareness? I mean, do you think you as a soul are at this time reaching toward monadic awareness? Do you find that you are somehow doing that? Remember, the word M-O-N means one. You'll notice that the word monk begins with M-O-N, as does the word monad. So monadic awareness is about oneness. So if we wish to understand something about that high type of awareness, which we cannot yet understand at all completely, we can indeed think of a type of perception which reveals oneness. And as well, we have this reaching towards the coordinated and at one personality. Are we an integrated at one personality? Are we that? do we know what it's like to reach in two directions simultaneously, towards the one and then towards the, we can call it maybe the integrated many? But we can see that this factor of integration, of oneness, of wholeness, is an important factor in any ability to access intuition. So, let's go on. I mean, and obviously, you would have to spend some time with yourself and your journal. And try to see if you can enter any kind of oneness state, and you can deal with many as if they were one. We're dealing with the one and the many here. Now, no one has intuition unless they can see the many as the one. Maybe that's a bold statement, but I believe it to be correct. And that in the Aquarian age, this kind of perception or infusception, I call it, will develop. The whole question of resolving the one and the many is a task for the intuition. So going on, we say then that intuition is a comprehensive grip. Whenever you see the word grip, you know, you grasp, grip, you think of Vulcan. And it has to do with the spiritual will. But there are other planetary factors involved. Intuition is a comprehensive grip of the principle of universality. And when it is functioning, there is momentarily at least a complete loss of the sense of separateness. Now, that's a really important statement. You know, all these things that we've looked at, the loving, outgoing, the understanding of who a person may be, the seeing of a vision, the seeing of symbols, the registration of archetypal patterns, all those are good things, but you can have them without having a comprehensive grip of the principle of universality, which negates all sense of separateness. It basically overcomes the one great separateness, the one great heresy, the heresy of separateness. And in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, in the later parts of the book, it talks about this seeing of the whole world as if within yourself. Universality. Grasping a type of wholeness. Universality and wholeness, I think, are very related. Of course, this is not knowing every little thing that goes on in the universe or even in our solar system. It's not knowing all the occult details necessarily. It's something else. When I was reading an externalization yesterday, he said all the assimilation of occult knowledge and detail is something other than the intuition. It's a special form of perception. he didn't really elaborate upon it, but he told us it was not the intuition per se. Intuition is a comprehensive grip of the principle of universality, and when it is functioning, there is, because it, you know, it may not function with continuity. Continuity of intuition would already indicate a very high stage of initiation. When it is functioning, there is momentarily at least a complete loss of the sense of separateness. At its highest point, it is known as that universal love. Notice not just loving outgoing and appreciating others and, you know, all the things that we saw. It was not, when he described what it is not. At its highest point, it is known as that universal love which has no relation to sentiment or to the affectional reaction, but is predominantly in the nature of, and here comes another one of those potent statements, is predominantly in the nature of identification with all beings. Now think of that just for a moment. Identification with all beings. Can you use your imagination to look out into the world and out or in at the variety of beings, whether from whatever kingdom, even mineral, certainly plant or animal, and certainly above and beyond the human, but our major concern is the human right now. Can you feel or sense or register identification with these beings? Let's just pause. I would say that it has very little to do with the registration of form, because in the registration of form, there is always distinction and apparent division. I would say it has to do with some heartfelt detection of a commonality which all beings share, and it's very hard to define. It's as if this idea of pervasive being can only be registered by the intuition and not by the mind, which divides and analyzes and does all those good things, but which are not yet the intuition. So universal love, that's another step, which has no relation to liking or disliking, you know. Liking or disliking is something that has to be eliminated. It's one of the four eliminations in the beginning of Rule 11 in the Rays and the Initiations. And these eliminations pave the way to the group taking the fourth initiation. So it's a very high rule. I remember when I was working in the Arcane School and I first came there, I heard it spoken. Rule 11, rule 11, rule 11. I realized that no one I know and no group I know is anywhere near being able to fulfill rule 11. But it was a great ideal of the group there. So you could tell Mary Bailey was thinking high, even though the relatively young people who were brought in to headquarters really couldn't grasp it. So at its highest point, it is known as universal love, not sentiment. And in the nature of identification with all beings, can you identify with a plant? Can you identify with an animal, regardless of whether that animal is friendly or unfriendly, poisonous or not, you know, dangerous or not? It's not about what it is. It's about that it is. If I look at a lion and a snake together, can I identify not only with them, but as them? It's very subtle, I think. And we can't be put off by the form. It's the form that usually repels us or attracts us, you know, attraction to form, repulsion from form. This will kill the intuition because you fail to see or identify as the pervasive factor. The pervasive factor. There's nothing that is not pervaded by the pervasive factor, which is being itself. And if we have this universal love and a complete loss of the sense of separateness, it's rather hard in the political situation these days to have the complete loss of the sense of separateness, then is true compassion known. True compassion, not just what masquerades as compassion. Then does criticism, the destructive kind, you know, not the analysis to help people improve, but tearing down, then does criticism become impossible? Then only is the divine germ seen as latent in all forms. All forms. A dangerous form. A disgusting form. All forms. Intuition is light itself. And when it is functioning, the world is seen as light. That's an old Kabbalistic idea that light is substance, is the very basis of the construction of the universe. In other words, everything that we register as in the universe is condensed light. The world is seen as light, and the light bodies of all forms, you know, in the Aquarian age, this will come, the light bodies of all forms become gradually apparent. And, you know, people will look upon other people and realize that such and such a person has taken the first initiation because of the demonstration of light. And this brings with it the ability to contact the light center in all forms. The form is light. Light is substantial. And when you're looking for that which is non-substantial in the formal sense, you have to deal with the absolute. There is no light or no anything in the absoluteness. When the universe emerges, it emerges as condensed, diversified light. And any type of articulation, even the articulation of absolute infinitude, requires or is the demonstration of light. So if we have all these things here, we will be able to contact the light center in all forms, and more of us will be able to do that during the kind of etheric stimulation which the Aquarian age will see emerge. And thus again, an essential relationship is established, and the sense of superiority and separateness recedes into the background. You might as well talk to students of occultism about that, because they can be guilty of mental pride. Now, in this little bit, just in this paragraph alone, there is so much. Now, we're not going to take it further. Next time we will, we're going to look at what illumination is, what understanding is, that's the word Stephen used, what love is, we'll look. Because if we can master or gain an understanding of these first few pages, which deal with the nature of intuition, then we will be able to come to terms with what I call the pervasive factor. You know what the word pervasion means? It goes through and through and through and through all things. We will come to terms with the pervasive factor. And whatever form throws at us in terms of registration, and these forms are good to study in their own right, we have to study the great Maya. The pervasive factor will be foremost in our consciousness and in our sense of who we are. We are that which pervades, regardless of what form tells us. And that will change our sense of identity altogether. Not in the practical sense. We still have to be our illusory identity in this great drama of universal manifestation. But at the same time, we have to have the background, which is the reality. That word has been used, the reality, which intuition reveals. So I think we begin to see that we have been a little superficial regarding what we think intuition is. It's related to many things, and we do know and understand and have flashes of revelation, and we have higher psychic impression. We have all these things. But unless the principle of universality is there, we don't have the intuition. So, Michael, or Michaels, if you will be so kind as to remind me next time of where we are, I can see that it's really worth getting into these pages, because we will rely upon the intuition to reveal being. And if we live through life this incarnation, without the revelation of being, we don't know who we are. I'll repeat that. If we live through our incarnation without the revelation of and identification as being, we don't know who we are. Okay. So that's as far as I'm going to go. That's about an hour's worth. And then I'll open the floor up to anyone who would like to make a comment. And I would suggest, unless you are speaking, to keep your video off. There's a place where you can stop your video. And that should be done. Okay. So, Michael, Stacy, can you see if there's anybody that would like to speak to any of these matters? I'll turn my video off, and Joan, you too. We've had a few paragraphs, that have set the stage for the real depth of intuition and its relation to universal love, its relationship to identification. Universal love and identification are indispensable to understanding the intuition. It's not just about knowledge. DK gives us some high sources from which that very esoteric knowledge comes. But it's not necessarily based upon universality and universal love and identification. Okay, is there anybody, Michael? Or are you there? Is anybody there? Okay.
I am here.
Yes, dear. You are here. Okay.
But very, very much problems. It has been cutting out. But I don't know. Do we have participants? Oh, yes, we have participants.
We have a few participants remaining. But I would normally expect to hear from
Michael
Crowe or Michael Stacy. Mm-hmm.
My headset was muted for some reason.
Oh, okay.
So I am keeping an eye out for anyone raising their hand or writing into the chat box. In Treatise on Cosmic Fire, there is a line of the sense of smell under which intuition falls on the Buddhic plane.
That's kind of interesting because it's what's called idealism, and you sort of smell out the essence of things. It's a very high sense, and you're correct about that. Let's see if I can find it. Okay. Let's see if I can do this. Yeah. And
it's on page 188.
Okay, well, I'm actually not going to go there. I'm just going to this graph, this tabulation here. This sense of smell is related to the highest of the senses, even though in common analysis, it's considered one of the first and lowest senses. It's related to idealism. Do you see this chart that Keith Bailey made? Are you seeing that?
Yes, we are.
Okay, so here's idealism, and here is all knowledge. You sort of suss it out. You find yourself smelling or scenting beingness. In other words, it's a very subtle kind of thing. You can tell what it is by the sense of smell. and it reveals the absolute essence of things. Now, it also takes you via the number 6, I don't know exactly why I'm saying that, but it takes you to the monadic plane. So the sense of smell will elevate when actually it's page 188, you're quite correct. It takes us as high as we can go. It's considered the highest sense, but then there's also the common sense and the esoteric sense. But the sense of smell is right on the border of being able to detect essence. Now, I don't know the method of detecting beings with the sense of smell, but I know they must be related. Okay. Are there any thoughts that you would like to share? Any questions that you have in the field of occultism in general, or about what we've been discussing? Are there any surprises here? Because, you know, all the things that Master DK eliminated are oftentimes taken for intuition. When we get the impression of a superior type of knowledge coming from who knows what level of tension, we say, ah, I've had an intuition. But he is dealing with wholeness, universality, identification. He starts there, and that's what we should begin to think about. Is that, and I know these are abstruse subjects, and I never pretended that we would not have to be very sensitive in order to try to discuss them a little bit. So, you know, it's not easy what I'm asking, but still we have to make the attempt. Anybody?
Still no one has written anything, but I'm expecting some thoughts to come through.
Yeah, well, the thoughts may be cooking, but whether they will be written or verbalized is another matter. Look, I know we all feel a natural kind of reticence when we deal Michael. With these matters. Yes, dear. Yes.
I was just thinking about this universal love and mothers that that like the intuition.
Right, telepathy. Sometimes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, something which is because of the love one sees and gets that flash. It can be like in the means of warning or that. Or something like that. I'm just thinking of that, like when my grandmother, there was a war in Finland and what kinds of things she got, and it was saving then their whole family or something like that. And I think that the basis of that is because of the love that there
I
is the access.
These things of telepathic knowledge, whether it comes through the solar plexus or the mind or soul telepathy, will be added to a person when they have that universal love. We cannot say that those are intuitions per se, but we can say that they are the result of the universal love which intuition is. So a big love reveals. A deep state of love is revelatory of all kinds of knowledge. See, here's the question. Is intuition, how is intuition related to knowledge? Now, DK begins in another place. He eliminates the knowledge factor for a little while, and then he adds these other necessities, like identification, universal love, the principle of universality, and then these other things are added in. There's a statement in the Bible, and I think you all know it, It says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all things shall be added unto you." So I'm thinking that all of these knowledges and special perceptions will be added to the person when they are in the state of intuition, which he defines here as identification, universality, universal love. So I think we should ponder on the first thing, which is these things, and then how the knowledge comes. I would like to, Michael Stacy, if you can remind me next time, I would like to turn to externalization of the hierarchy, where DK gives an analysis of the disciple called Z. And he explains what are some additional requirements, and they have to do with love and participation for a person to be truly intuitive. I think it would be useful for the group, but I don't want to go hunting for it right now. And by the way, I want to say now, friends, that I have finished the book, at least to the end, of Externalization of the Hierarchy, commentary on it. You'll have your own thoughts, your own comments, etc. I finished the book. I began at page 61 and went to page 701. There's a little bit in the beginning about the seed groups that I will take up when it's possible. But if you want to understand how hierarchy has been preparing to come out on the external plane, there's no better source than this book, Externalization of the Hierarchy. And it's filled with many surprises and many clarifications regarding the externalization. It may take rather longer than we anticipate, and it will not be an all-conquering event. And it's already been in practice since the year 1860, he tells us. So I would recommend that if you have the time, up on Makara, there will be some of my commentary, video commentary on externalization. Every word in the book is read, and then those words that seem to require amplification and sentences which require connecting, I've tried to do that a bit. And then I will add to it the beginning of the book, but the beginning of the book has material that you can also find elsewhere. So just to let you know that on Makara, these resources are available to you. Okay, well, look, these are very deep things. Very deep things. Everybody has to develop this. Maybe the second ray monadic types do better with universal love. And maybe first and second ray types on that high level do well with identification. But I think everybody can begin to grip or grasp a sense of wholeness and a sense of identicality. If you can see the identicality with indifference, okay, not indifference, but in the state of difference, then you are in the grips of intuition and in the larger sense. And that's what DK is doing. He's giving it to us in the larger sense. So ponder on these things. And use your abstract mind, use your antikarana methods that DK has given, and be open to the Einfall, as Catherine said, you know, the falling in, the dropping in to your consciousness of unsuspected light and revelation. Michael, is there anybody else or anything else? Or is your headset?
I am not seeing any hands raised. Okay. There is one thing in chat, which I'm pulling up now.
Okay.
Anna writes, it is like event horizon at the black hole. Touching it expands us by adding speed. Having the Christ expands.
Yes, it's interesting there, the blend of this advanced astral physics and the kind of material that we study on the second ray. It's like a blend of the second and fifth ray, what you've been saying. And these event horizons, you know, and the black holes, they may give entree into higher states of vibration about which science presently knows nothing. In other words, the things which disappear or seem to disappear within the black hole may lead to new types of experience on higher planes, and may be many types of vortexes, absorbing vortexes that go from plane to plane and have an analogy to the black hole. It may take us to the very heights of the universe. Right now, what we have to do is get the fifth ray types to, well, see beyond the possibility that only the ether, or whatever they now call it, does exist. In other words, that there is an astral, mental, Buddhic, et cetera, dimension. Modern science is very far from that. But I think that there are analogies to what's going on physically and etherically to what may be happening as we transit from plane to plane and are absorbed into new points of tension, new revelatory points of tension, which the higher planes demand if they are going to reveal their content. So, you know, there are a number of books from physicists who have also the consciousness dimension. Maybe they began first with the consciousness dimension. And I don't know, they were very popular a few years ago. And somehow they are useful to read if we want to combine the fifth ray with the second ray. Is there anything else?
Yes. Stephen writes, I sometimes think of the oneness as light being added to light, or fire being added to fire, if that makes any sense.
I'd have to ponder it, Stephen. You know, look, I'm a pragmatist in these matters. We have in the teaching the idea that in that light we shall see light, a greater light. So that idea is well anchored in the teaching, and the idea is that if we can master one level of light or one level of revelation, it can lead to further revelations until a final revelation of identicality, beingness, homogeneity is revealed until we become the pervasive factor. Now think about that for a minute. At some point, we must realize that we are the pervasive factor. Now how you get there? And what works for you and what works for your consciousness, I would just encourage everybody to do what you have done. Basically, you've found a method of approaching oneness, and it works for you. So let everybody think deeply and meditate deeply. Does it just happen for you? Do you have to reason your way there? Does it happen under certain circumstances? Are there certain mantra which assist the process? It's different for everybody. And if it works, it works. But let's just say that until, this is my opinion, okay? Until we recognize ourselves, see, not only recognize a pervasive factor, but recognize that we are essentially that pervasive factor, we still have a ways to go. This is the what he calls in Rule 5 and Rule 9, the blotting out of the light of form and the blotting out of all form. I think in Rule 5, he talks about the blotting out of the light of form. And in Rule 9, for disciples and initiates, he talks about the complete blotting out of form, which doesn't mean you don't register form, but its reality is negated and it is seen as Maya and illusion. And the pervasive factor is what is registered as the reality. And, you know, I suggest that people pursue that line of thought because it will restore us to our true identity and help us from making the big mistake, which is mistaken identification. So if adding light to light works for you, then so be it. Anything else?
I find it quite interesting that as I read articles from Scientific American and especially from physicists, that portion of exact science is slowly coming into alignment with the ageless wisdom.
They are the true occultists, says DK, and they're on the cusp of the revelation of the ethers. Already the ethers, which have been, you know, discounted since the late 1880s by the Michelson-Morley experiment, which did away for the need of ethers, according to the scientists, but they are now on the cusp of the rediscovery of the ethers. And the occult ethers are considered to be the first and second. I'm talking about the, let me go here. That's not going to work. There it is. Share? Why is this not? Okay. What? Uh-oh. That's not good. I want to go back to where I was. Well, something has happened.
Are you not able to share your screen now?
Well, I've got something. I've got something at least. And this is maybe not the diagram that I would use, but it's okay. So the truly occult aspects of any sevenfold plane. Do you see the map here with the flower in the center?
Yes, we do.
Okay. The truly occult aspect of it is the first and second planes of each of these sevenfold planes. And science has already penetrated into the particle physics and is dealing with the fourth ether. And maybe there is some venturing into something we might call the third ether. I suppose, not knowing so much about it, but that string theory is involved here. But I think science is not yet penetrating into the first and second ether, which are the truly occult ethers. But this is their focus, and it would be in a fifth ray, seventh ray age, which we are entering. It is the seventh plane, and we're dealing with the divisions of the seventh plane, the subtle divisions. And what happens when we discover the permanent atoms which are to be found on the highest ether? There'll be quite a, you know, a real revolution in our whole atomic theory. But this is just the beginning. What about penetrating into the material reality of the astral plane, the sentient plane, which is unified and not divided? What about penetrating into the physical reality? I'm using that specifically, purposefully, the physical atomic reality of the lower mental plane and beyond. So we can see how much even the brightest of the fifth ray occultists has yet to do. Now, we expect some of this coming from France. We have been told with its Pisces fifth ray soul, they will be revealing scientifically the nature of the soul. So the atomic structures to be found on all of these subplanes will be the subject of revolution. And that's just the beginning, because there are atomic structures on all of these cosmic etheric planes that I'm indicating here with the cursor. So we have so much exploration to do, but the fifth ray scientists, who are the real occultists, DK says, they're off to a good start. And in the Aquarian age, with its emphasis upon the seventh ray and the fifth ray, a lot will be accomplished, I think, along these lines. Okay. Is there anything else?
No hands raised and no more written comments or questions in the chat box.
Okay. So let's close. Now, Michael, you'll remind me next time of where we let off in our study of the intuition. And meanwhile,
I have made note of the reminders for you, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. And meanwhile, you know, during the week, let's see if we can deepen our thought about what intuition is and whether we can experience it to some degree. And, you know, think about the factor of pervasion, which I've called the pervasive factor, as being equivalent to being and therefore equivalent to true identity. Every once in a while, maybe give a little thought along those lines. I know we're all busy people, and we have a lot of concrete myopic things to do. But I just saw the screen change. I don't know how that happened. But give some thought to that. And I think if we can come out with a better idea of what intuition is and isn't, we will be able to work with these principles of love and universality and identification. Maybe even before the third initiation, some inklings of these factors can emerge. So, let me look for, Well, that's inclusive reason, and we'll be dealing with that. It's very interesting. But, do you see the great invocation? Is that before
yes,
our
that
eyes?
Yes, that is showing on the screen now.
Okay, very good. Okay, friends, then, it's the early morning hour, you know, so we miss the United States pretty much, except for the far west coast. Next time we'll have more people. I hope that everybody who could not attend will have a chance to at least listen to what we've been talking about, because that will be a good preparation for what we do next time. All right. So the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, tonight the reappearance of the Christ broadcast at our usual YouTube live link. It will be at 5 p.m. GMT. Tuya will lead that. A very important meditation. DK told us that the information he gave about the new group of world servers and the reappearance of the Christ with its externalization of the hierarchy was the most important information he gave under any circumstances, the most important teaching that he gave. So, you know, every week, let's work on this reappearance of the Christ, whether you're with us or do it in your own way. Every week, let's do that. And then, tomorrow, Friday morning, we'll have the Treatise on Cosmic Fire in depth, and in the evening, we will have the Glamour meditation. And then the Soul of Nations on Saturday, and on Sunday, the Attracting financial resources for the hierarchical work and the work of establishing the plan on earth. Thank you for your attendance. Thank you, Michael and Tuya, and Michael Crow for being there. and we will continue learning, absorbing, applying. So lots of love, many blessings to everyone, and we'll just keep on keeping on, as they say in the Arcane School. So let's see, maybe, I don't know, Michael, I think you are the one who might have to end this meeting. I don't think I can do that.
I am stopping the recording.
Okay.